Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today, my returning guest, is my friend Robert Maripol, who is the son of Ethel and Julius Rosenberg, and he's going to share his thoughts on the impeachment of Donald Trump. Hi, Robbie. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me return. There is certainly plenty to talk about since I'm not sure when was the last time we talked. Maybe in early September or maybe sometime during the summer. But so much has happened that there's a lot to catch up with.
It seems that the impeachment process is getting closer and closer. Now, you know, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, what if he is impeached? What if it goes, I heard a couple of scenarios on the TV. If he's impeached, if the House and he is not convicted in the Senate, then he might, you know, he might go for re-election and, you know, he'll be kind of be home free. But the other thing is, what if he isn't at the bills of impeachment in the House, he is convicted in the Senate, and then they were saying he might run as a private citizen and run for president for a second term. What do you think of that one?
Well, I mean, you know, you can speculate on all these possibilities, but you know, the best we can do at this point is extrapolate from the current situation. And the main variable is that when everything goes public, when they start having the public hearings, and all the facts come out, is it going to be is public opinion going to switch so strongly against him that even the senators, you know, it would take something like 20 Republican senators to vote to convict him, and while that could happen if public opinion swings drastically against him, I think the more likely scenario is that he will not be convicted, and that, you know, Bill Clinton never attended the Senate trial, and I don't think Donald Trump will attend any Senate trial, and I think Mitch McConnell, in charge of the trial, will do whatever he can to make the trial as inconsequential as possible. And so I think the chances are that he will not be convicted. Your scenario is interesting, but I think it's very unlikely. That says he's not home free in the sense that he still has to run for re-election. And I think that, you know, perhaps I am guilty of being overly optimistic, but as I read the current political landscape, I think he's going to lose re-election. I don't think he's going to be re-elected, but that doesn't mean that he won't be, because again, all I'm doing is extrapolating from the current situation. The comment I want to make about the impeachment is that, you know, once again, I think we're doing the right thing for the wrong reason. This whole focus, I mean, you know, when Donald Trump says he's fighting with the deep state, he's exactly correct. That's exactly who he's fighting with. The intelligence bureaucracy, the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, the State Department, all are internationally oriented bureaucracy, realizes that Trump is pursuing his personal interests rather than pursuing our country's imperial interests. So the Democrats who are trying to impeach him are coming out in favor of our empire versus his political shenanigans. And while I think that's true, that's actually what's going on, it is, you know, to be praising CIA and FBI and NSA and State Department people who are trying to maintain our empire all over the world, and to be attacking Trump for damaging, quote, our national security. I mean, while all of that is true, if you accept their premises, it is the absolutely wrong reason for impeaching him. I mean, aside from, you know, that's my opinion on this, that he should be impeached, but he should be impeached for all of his illegal activities, for all of his damaging of our environment, for all of his obstruction of justice, for all of his self-dealing. I mean, there's a million reasons for what he did at the border. There's so many reasons, and that's what we should be impeaching him for. Unfortunately, I mean, I'm glad they're going ahead and they're bringing all this up, but again, I don't think they're doing it for the right reason.
But you know something, once you attain a certain level in politics, even locally, I want to say, the Democrats are not choir boys. They're not innocent. So do you think that it's justified that they be pointing the finger at Trump and say he's corrupt, he's in it for himself, when more or less they're guilty of the same things? What do you think?
Well, I think that it's a question of degree. I think if you look at Joe Biden and Hunter Biden's situation,
right,
and the
right,
their families profiting from being connected to the vice president of the United States and making deals that make lots of money. I mean, it's not, it's subtler. It's not conducting foreign policy in order to make as much money as possible, at least in the immediate sense, though. So, they're not choir boys. They have been doing subtly and elevating form over substance in a manner so that they can engage in activities that are kind of sleazy without actually breaking the rules, because the rules are designed to enable that kind of benefit for the wealthy and the powerful. After all, they're the ones who made the rules. So big surprise. This is on a different and much more straightforward level. I mean, I think it can be argued that it's the difference between kind of the military-industrial complex of capitalism and the mafia. They both engage in shenanigans in order to make money, but one is legitimized by the rules that they've helped write, and the other tries to, you know, makes their own rules up. I think that Trump is far from I think the Democrats are far from choir boys, but they're not, at least most of them are not quite in the same category as Trump. So it's kind of a subtle distinction. And then, of course, there's a wing of the Democratic Party, particularly that wing that's willing to take on corporate America, that's actually fighting against that kind of corruption. And that's the split you see in the Democratic Party. You have candidates who are on the outside and trying to regulate, control, and get create things that are more fair. On the other hand, you have corporate-oriented Democrats who want to put a good face on things and want to make some token reforms, but basically keep the system the way it is so that they mm-hmm. can continue to exploit it in a more subtle manner. And you know, I think that's the Pelosi wing, and those are the people who are orchestrating the impeachment. So it's not surprising that it all kind of fits together. And of course, those are the people who are really, really upset that it seems like the most popular wing of the Democratic Party is now behind anti-corporate people. And that's a real frightening prospect, and that's why you have someone like Michael Bloomberg talking about entering the election, because as Biden has faltered, they know he's just not up to snuff for whatever reason. He's not going to be able to beat Trump, and he's not going to win the nomination. Some of them have turned to Mayor Pete, and you know, the problem you have with him is America really ready for a gay president? I don't think so. The people in the middle don't have anybody to turn to. So Bloomberg says, well, you know, I'll try my hand. I don't think he's going to go anywhere either, but that's where it's.
I think Mayor Pete, I think he's pretty good. I mean, he's young, he's 37, he's smart, mm-hmm. and he's not in his 70s like a lot of them. So, mm-hmm. you know, everybody's got their own orientation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that should not be a factor. I think people should just...
Well, I agree with you. It shouldn't be a factor, but I think it is.
That's unfortunate. That's really unfortunate. You know.
I don't think it should be a factor that Elizabeth Warren is female, and that's the main thing against her. And I don't think it should be a factor that Bernie Sanders is Jewish. And I think that if it comes down to if he ends up with getting the nomination, that's going to end up being a major factor. So I think, you know, none of these things should be a factor, but they are. And it's our job, I guess, to fight against them. My problem with Mayor Pete is watching him take all this Wall Street money and watching him move away from Medicare for All and other progressive programs that, in exchange for all the money he's getting from Wall Street. And that makes me very suspicious of him.
Do you think it's possible, you know, Bloomberg just stepped in the other day. Do you mm-hmm. think it's possible that there still might be somebody lurking at the edges who might jump in at some point?
Well, you know, it's certainly possible, but I think it becomes very, very difficult with, you know, the primaries coming up really quickly, and you have mm-hmm. to develop an organization, and you have to. I think it would be very difficult for anybody at this point. And you know, when I think about people jumping in, I have noticed what I would call the very loud silence of former President Obama. Is the question in my mind is, as it's getting close to the convention, is he going to come down in favor of someone? And that could have a powerful impact. But he's got to do that in time to have an impact on the primaries. And I don't know how that plays out. But again, when I think of people on the periphery, I don't think of people throwing in their hats so much. I think of what the Obamas, and I'll put it in plural, the two of them together as a team become even more powerful than just one of them, whether they're mm-hmm. going to attempt to influence who is nominated. And that could make a big difference.
You know, when I talk to friends who are of a conservative persuasion, even I have relatives who are also who still think that Donald Trump can walk on water. Why can't they see what's going on and have a different perspective? What is it about, you know, people who are conservative or Republican or libertarian who think that what he's doing is still okay?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's very hard to get into the heads of people who think very differently from the way you think. It's you know, you can't imagine it. In general, people's politics reflect their life experience. And if your life experience is being in a relatively homogeneous community and where you don't have experience in dealing with diverse populations, and your window on the world is Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and, you know, the various other right-wing talk show hosts who confirm all your propensities to begin with, and you look out at the world and you say, my God, there are all these people with threatening our gender roles and threatening our ethnicity and our way of life, then people become, and then you have someone out there who's telling you very slickly, pushing all your buttons and saying, this is how we're going to make America great again, which is basically code for making it the way it used to be when the whites were on top and everybody else was on bottom. You're going to buy it. It speaks to you. I mean, I think that's the thing that the people who are going to stick with Trump no matter what are they terrified that their way of life is being destroyed, and they feel it very profoundly and very deeply and very powerfully, even if that's not how they articulate what when they say they support Trump. But that is a very powerful motivator, and it's not going away.
Now, given the fact that Roy Cohen prosecuted your parents, mm-hmm. and Roy Cohen was Donald Trump's mentor, when you see Donald Trump on TV saying all kinds of stuff, it's more than just, you know, okay, I'm watching it. You have like a personal, I don't know if the word would be stake, but you have more of a feel than the average person. I know we used the word anger before, but how do you feel when you see all this stuff on TV?
Well, you know, when you're right. I see the channeling of Roy Cohn, who said, you know, never defend, always counterattack, always accuse the person who's attacking you of doing the very thing that you've been doing. So, you know, a lot of times when Trump is going on and on about how important it is to rule out corruption, essentially, when he says things like that, you just have to realize that all he's doing is repeating what he actually does and putting it on someone else. That's Roy Cohn's style. And I see Roy Cohn so I hear Roy Cohn's voice when I hear Trump speak. And the reaction it has in me is that, you know, you might call it anger, but for me, the simple solution is to change the channel. So I have to admit that I haven't heard Trump talk for long periods of time. I get little snippets that I see on the news, or if I'm channel surfing and he's on TV, I might watch a sentence or two, but I just can't stand it. I just cannot. It's so revolting to me that I switch to someone else. And I found that's the case with a lot of people I know, that, you know, they get the gist of what Trump is saying from watching the news, and they get snippets of him. But it's not like the people who go to his rally and listen to him for an hour. I mean, I know no one, or virtually no one, who's actually sat in front of the TV and watched Trump give one of his hour-long harangues at a rally. It's just so disgusting they can't do it. I don't know. Maybe you can do it, but I sure can't.
So what do you envision happening as far as the House with a bill of impeachment? And none of us have crystal balls. What do you see happening in the Senate, and how do you think that's going to affect the election?
Well, I think that you know, the question in my mind is, how quickly can the House actually conclude all these hearings? When they go public, the Republicans are going to try to turn them into a circus. They are going to do everything they possibly can to disrupt the flow of these hearings. And that probably means that they're going to end up taking quite a bit longer than the Democrats hope they take. So I see them actually lingering on into January. And I don't see a Senate trial taking place immediately either. So I think the first thing that I want to predict, though of course I could be wrong, is this process is going to go more slowly than planned, that it's going to linger through the winter. I don't know that it's going to make it to the spring, but it's not going to be over by Christmas time. That's for sure. My prediction is I think the House will vote articles of impeachment. Whether they are expanded beyond the Ukrainian situation and the obstruction of Congress, in other words, whether they're more than two articles or not, well, that's an open question, and I don't really have a prediction one way or another whether something else will get added, because, you know, bombshells keep dropping, and who knows what's coming out next week. But in any event, so that's two things I can't really put my finger on. But I do expect that the Senate will ultimately conduct some sort of a truncated trial, which I think will be pretty much a joke, because Mitch McConnell will be orchestrating it, and it will we will end up with the question in my mind is, will a majority of senators actually vote to remove him? You know, that will be interesting, because I think even if it's 51-49, that's going to be very powerful, even if he's not convicted. That's kind of what I hope happens, because I think hoping that he's going to be removed is way too much to hope for. So what impact is it going to have on the election? I think the election is the biggest thing that's going to affect the election is exciting the base. Will the Democrats have a candidate who excite the base? And if they do, I think they'll win. And I think they may even win pretty big. But there's no guarantee that they're going to have a candidate who excites the base. And if they don't have a candidate who excites the base, then it's going to be very close, just like last time. And unless Trump is beaten by a lot, there's really the danger that he will simply refuse to leave office and claim that it's all phony. I don't know how that plays out. And where that goes, but it could very well be a major governmental crisis. You know, that's The other thing I want to mention about this, Cynthia, and that is that it's going off base a little bit, and that is, or at least sort of off topic just a little bit, and that is one of the things that I've been thinking about, and I know that there's a danger of voting for older people at this point, but as I look at the situation from an environmental perspective, which frankly I think is the most important perspective of all, because if we can't breathe the water and we can't if we can't breathe the air and we can't drink the water and we can't grow our food, it really doesn't matter who's on the Supreme Court. And I think that the science is pretty clear that if we don't take drastic action, we don't need to solve the problem, but we need to take significant steps towards solving the problem before 2028. The scientists say, well, by 2030, but they've been overly conservative in their predictions. So I think 2028 sounds about right. Maybe it's even sooner. And if we don't elect, if we elect a Democrat who is not willing to take on American corporate power and transform the nature of our energy usage, if we don't elect such a Democrat, even if Trump loses and we get a corporate Democrat in, and then that corporate Democrat's of course going to run for re-election in 4 years, and that brings us to 2028. If we elect such people, and we haven't made the progress that we need to make by 2028, I think, you know, and I mean this literally, not figuratively, I think society will collapse. Not in 2029, but probably sometime in the 2040s or 2050s. And we're all doomed, those of us who are still alive. Of course, I probably won't be by then because I would be 110. The point is that given that, and given the dire nature of our situation, and given that there are only two major Democratic candidates who are anti-corporate, and that's Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, I think people on the left should be pushing for the two of them to combine. I'm not sure how that combination would work, but I think if you look at their poll numbers and their constituencies, if they combined, they would win the Democratic nomination, one or the other of them, and I think they would beat Trump. But that's, you know, that's my opinion. And I think this idea of them combining is at first blush totally absurd. How could that ever happen? But on the other hand, I feel that the only way it's going to happen is if there's a groundswell of progressive people saying, you've got to do this. If you really believe in what you say you believe in, then you should be doing this. So I'm sort of hopeful that this kind of far-out idea can catch hold in the next few months, and that we can move in that direction. I admit it's a long shot, but that's the way I'm thinking about the Democratic race for the presidential nomination.
In 2016, there was a lot of talk about foreign interference. Do you think that's going to be? You think that's going to be a major factor in 2020?
It certainly looks that way, doesn't it? I mean, it certainly looks that way. But I think, you know, on the one hand, it looks that way. On the other hand, if people expect it and are alerted to it, they will, it might be less effective than it was. But then again, I hope that's, you know, not just wishful thinking on my part. The other thing is that I can't help note the hypocrisy of the people who are making, particularly mainstream people, who are making such a big deal over foreign interference when we interfere in other people's elections constantly. And so, you know, we have to, we have to realize that in some ways we're getting a taste of our own medicine, and maybe we ought to be a little bit humbled and a little bit less on our high horse, because as you said about the Democrats before, you know, they're far from pure. And when it comes to foreign interference in elections, we are far from pure.
So, you know, the next couple of months are going to be very interesting, you know, for the presidency and also leading up to the 2020 election. So I would love to have you back on. I enjoy talking to you. You are wonderful. Would you come back?
Sure. I'm happy to do that. I'm, you know, it's now November. If let's wait until, you know, probably maybe like right after the turn of the year, when we're getting ready for the new Congress, and we've seen how whether the impeachment process in the House is over or still dragging on. I think that would be a good time to talk.
Okay. Give a little plug for your niece, Ivy.
Oh, okay. Well, some of your listeners have probably seen her latest film, which is called Bully Coward Victim, the story of Roy Cohn. There's two Roy Cohn documentaries out. One is less personal. It's the one, Where's My Roy Cohn, which is a documentary that came out in September. This one, Ivy's film, my niece, is more personal, because it's not only a documentary about who Roy Cohn was and what he did. It also has elements of memoir, because, of course, Roy Cohn was instrumental in having the filmmaker's grandparents executed. So you have that sort of personal family element grafted onto a documentary story of one of the 20th century's biggest villains.
Now, you had gone to the film festival in New York City. How was that?
That was great. It was great to see it. And again, it's why I can say with confidence that it's a unique documentary, because of the combination of research, and particularly one of the things that Ivy was able to do was because Roy Cohn spent so much of his time in Provincetown, and that was the part of his life which was least known to the public. And Ivy was the editor of the Provincetown Literary Review and spent a lot of time in Provincetown herself. She has access to all these people who have inside information about Cohn in a way that you won't see in the other documentary. So again, Bully, Coward, Victim, I recommend it.
Is it in theaters? Is it on the internet? How can people see it?
No, it's at festivals. You have to be looking at festivals now. Okay. It will probably have a very brief theatrical run at the end of the year in New York and Los Angeles in order to qualify for awards. But then ultimately HBO will start showing it probably in the late spring. So anybody who is an HBO subscriber will be able to see the film on television.
Okay, terrific. So you have been listening to Robert Maripol. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about the show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Robert, have a great holiday season. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
And you too, Cynthia. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.